Anybody can be beat.
You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, and here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowling. And you are listening to another edition of Jet Nation Radio. I am Brandon Dowling alongside with Joe Blewett, and we are now just days away from the NFL draft, the telling draft for the New York Jets sitting with the 6th overall pick, as we finally are closing in on the NFL draft. And man, I am so excited to see who we are finally about to pick, see who the Jets decide to select, and move on from projecting the NFL draft. But before we do that, we got a great show for you tonight. We're going to have Matt Patanti join us from DraftDaddy.com. He's going to discuss, you know, what round one could look like for the Jets and also how they might approach the later rounds. You know, this is a big draft for the New York Jets. Obviously, with the offseason that they had, they're looking to get this team headed in the right direction with the signings along with a good draft overall to make this offseason an A+. One thing that, you know, an article that I read today, and we'll talk to Matt in about a minute here, was, you know, one thing that I thought was very interesting is the Jets have put them in a position outside of quarterback that they really, really don't have to draft for the need, more along the lines of drafting for the talent that's on the board. So I thought that was an interesting thing in there as well. So without further ado, joining us from Draft Daddy is Matt Patanti. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm awesome, man. It's great to be here.
So, Matt, the NFL draft obviously is days away, and, you know, someone like yourself who follows this thing all year round, I'll ask you, you know, right up, who do you see the Jets going with in round one?
Well, just to get right to it, I guess. I mean, ideally, they get their shot at Dante Fowler. You know, I think that's probably asking a bit too much. I think he's probably going to go 3 or 4, or maybe even 5. I see a scenario where the outside linebackers are probably gone. You know, I think Victor Beasley could go higher as well. So I think you're looking at wide receiver. The long and the short of it is, on my board, the value is at wide receiver. If Amari Cooper and Kevin White are there, Those four names are who you're picking from. You're picking from Fowler, Beasley, Kevin White, and Cooper. If they're all there, I mean, that'd be an amazing luxury to have, but I don't think they will be.
Okay, thanks again for joining us tonight on Jet Nation Radio. I was curious, because I know you're a diehard Jets fan yourself, so I was wondering how you see the running back and wide receiver position as of right now on the Jets, and who do you see as possible targets, you know, in the 3rd and 4th round, because we both know that this draft is extremely deep with receivers and running backs. So who would you like to see in the 3rd and 4th round, and how do you feel about the position as of right now?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the depth chart, I think running back is not bad. You know, Ivory and Powell is not a bad duo. You don't need to draft like a first round running back if that's your starting two, at least in my opinion. I saw earlier in the week, you know, ESPN had Todd Gurley going at 6. I think that's absurd, okay? I think you got to find a running back a little bit later. Definitely, if you want to get a running back in this deep class, I don't really know about which names to predict, because that's like a dicey game to play when it comes to the Jets, you know. I'm very biased, obviously, so I can't really predict the Jets as well as I predict some other teams. As weird as that sounds, I'm a little bit too emotional about the whole thing. But I don't think they need to go. They don't think they need to go running back within the first 2 rounds, at least, and even the 3rd round is probably pushing it. I feel like Ivory's your starter, and if he gets hurt, Powell's your backup, and if not, you have the whole rest of the draft to find somebody free agency, undrafted. You can find running backs everywhere. Their careers are all really short. You could take a chance on a guy like Jay Ajayi from Boise State. Like, everybody loves him, but if his knee's a red flag, you could get a shot at him in the 5th round, let's say. You know, so you're looking for a guy who falls, you know, and see what happens. I think wide receiver they're going to address relatively early, and the reason being that Decker is basically on a 1-year deal. He's 28, and you know, his best football arguably is behind him. He could stay for longer, but he's relatively high priced. The current regime has no attached to him, and he's basically got one more year of big-time guaranteed money. Brandon Marshall's 31. Neither of these guys are what you would call spring chicken that you could like build around for many, many years to come. So even if you end up taking like a Kevin White or Amari Cooper at six, you could have that guy as your number three and groom him behind Marshall and Decker, and probably one of them is going to be banged up. You're not going to get 16 games out of both of those guys. And they also have no attachment to Curley, who a lot of Jets fans like Jeremy Curley, and I like him too. But these guys might want someone different. They might want a bigger receiver. They might want a star receiver that's 6 feet tall. And that Jeremy Curley's not that player. So I think it's also, when you're looking at the Jets, they need to score more points, okay? Obviously, we know the quarterback situation is up in the air. But if you can't fix the quarterback necessarily at six, maybe try to get a player that can score points. And I think there's a very real shot they go wide out in one. If they don't go wide out in one, they'll probably go wide out in two or three, because it's kind of a need, you know, it's a desperate need, in my opinion.
Now, what do you think about a guy like Randy Gregory? Obviously, with the issues with the off-the-field stuff and, you know, coming back down to the, you know, with the marijuana allegations and everything like that, testing positive, do you think that the Jets could get him at six and it would be a steal based off of his talent and where he was before he was obviously, you know, had the off-the-field issues?
I mean, it's an interesting question. You know, what would his stock be if he didn't have the off-the-field issue is a very interesting question. I think, personally, I don't think Randy Gregory is that talented that he's like a Jadeveon Clowney-level prospect. He's an awesome prospect, and he's arguably a blue-chip prospect by some scouts, but he's not like Bruce Smith or somebody that you just can't resist because the physical ratio is so perfect. I think he is an interesting pass rusher. He'll probably go in the teens. It's too early to take him at six. He's actually the type of player the Bengals would take at 23, and they'd be like, we're going to give this guy a second chance. And I know they've been trying to get away from that sort of thing, but, you know, you don't want a guy that's already in the drug program. You don't want Shane Ray either for the same reason. Like, at six, you can't get a guy that's going to be drug tested every week or every month. And by the way, he couldn't pass the one drug test he knew that was coming. So it's like, it's not really an aspect of whether it's right or it's wrong, or should it be legal or should it not be legal. It's like, what's your capability to deal with being a professional player and to be a professional athlete? It's hard. It's you're a corporation on two legs, and most 20-year-old guys couldn't do it. So I don't know that you didn't have to trade down. It's sort of the long and the short of it. So here's a scenario. The New Orleans Saints fall in love with Beasley. But let's say Vic Beasley, and Vic Beasley's on the board at six. They could trade down with the Saints, who are 13-21, and maybe they get Gregory at 13. You know what I mean? That could see something like that happening. But without a trade down, I don't see the value of that pick.
Okay, so, you know, I heard you talking before about, you know, the four guys, Kevin White, Amari Cooper,
Victor Beasley, Dante Fowler.
Right. And those guys, you know, along the lines. Now, those are top prospects. But what do you think about, you know, obviously, when you talked about Shane Ray before, don't think that you could see, like, a Dez Bryant-type situation with Randy Gregory or even, like, a Shane Ray where these guys, you know, coming out of college were, you know, top prospects and then sunk really low in the draft because of the off-the-field allegations? Or do you just think that there's just too much risk in being this, you know, with the sixth pick and taking a guy that has off-the-field problems?
Well, I mean, it's not, first of all, the draft really isn't what you or I want to have happen. That's like a harsh question I've learned over the years. So what I want to have happen is irrelevant. The question is, what do these guys want to have happen? It's their first pick ever, okay? This isn't Bill Belichick, who's got a million rings and he can just do whatever he wants and trade out every round. Like, these guys have to have a clean pick, you know? So I don't think they're valueless players. I have a grade on Shane Ray, and I have a grade on Randy Gregory, and they're good guys, they're good prospects. The question is, are they worth the sixth pick, you know? And that's what I can't really get past. I can foresee a scenario where they're worth a pick, but at six, the kind of season they had last year, all those losses, they should get somebody who's going to play and start, and hopefully they get an instant starter out of that pick.
Okay, so, you know, I heard you talking before about Kevin White and then Amari Cooper and then Fowler and Beasley and wanting to choose out of one of those four guys. But even though reports have come out recently, I still doubt them highly. But people are saying that if a guy like Beasley is available at six, the Jets still might take a guy like Bud Dupree mm-hmm. from Kentucky because Bowles, you know, quote-unquote, likes his bigger outside linebackers. What are your thoughts on that? And you think that's, you know, a possibility?
I mean, I definitely think that Victor Beasley's not a true fit for what the defense that Bowles is trying to run. So I think there's some truth to that sentiment that Coach Bowles might want a bigger player. I could definitely see that as something he would prioritize. Now, I don't know that would they go Dupree over Beasley? That seems like leaving value on the board. Again, this is where my bias comes in. If it was a different team, like the Patriots, and they took Beasley, they'd say, they took Dupree, and they'd say, what a great pick. It's a genius pick. But when the Jets do it, they're taking an outside linebacker at six, who's a workout warrior. They're taking a guy from the same school as Dwayne Robertson. It's just like a terrible karmic disaster to take Bud Dupree at six on all fronts. And these guys are new, and these guys are, and a lot of fans may not remember Dwayne Robertson in 2003 or whatever, but there's enough fans around that still do remember. And the New York Post will say, you took a guy from Kentucky at six who doesn't know how to play the position. And if you take a linebacker and he doesn't know how to play linebacker, that high in the draft, I think that's problematic. I think if you trade down and get Dupree, that's fine. You know, trade down 10 slots and it's fine. But I think at six, you need a guy that's going to play that position. If the Giants take Dupree at nine or the Falcons take him at eight, you put his hand down and he knows how to do that, presumably. It's an easier job to learn. But, I mean, taking an outside linebacker high, how about Brian Thomas? How about Calvin Pace? Even though the Jets didn't take him, that's how long it takes those guys to learn how to play the position. It takes them like three, four years to learn how to stand up. And these guys don't have 3 or 4 years. Idzik didn't even have 2 years.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I would definitely like to see a guy like Beasley taken over a guy like Dupree if they had to choose between the guys, obviously, for the reasons you stated. And it does take very long for an outside linebacker to develop. But, you know, moving on from outside linebacker, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Jets' offensive line and the additions they made in the offseason. I know they weren't big names. You got guys like Brewer, and then you got Carpenter, obviously. And in my personal preference, I want them to take an outside linebacker in the first round and an offensive lineman in the second. So who do you see being available as an offensive lineman in the second round, and who are you, you know, praying that flips to the 37th spot?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm higher on the offensive line than most people. I don't believe it's that bad of a need. You know, if you're taking a guy at 37, where do you expect him to start day one? And the answer is there isn't really, maybe right guard with Cologne is the only real starting spot that's up for grabs. But I think the depth chart is pretty much set. I mean, I know a lot of Jets fans bashed the Bergeshaw Ferguson. He's only played like 162 straight games. I mean, the guy's a rock. He's going nowhere. Nick Mangold is the best center in the league. Why do they need to keep drafting linemen, you know? And not to derail the whole conversation about prospects, because there's going to be guys down there like Abuye and, you know, maybe TJ Clemmings out of Pitt. There are guys you could probably get and say they're an upgrade over Breno Giacomini. Fair enough. Maybe there is. But, like, you know, Geno Smith isn't going to get 10 seconds to throw. That's the problem with the O-line. And Mark Sanchez had the same problem, is that you look at the games and you see a guy getting sacked and you think, he just beat his guy. But it's like you get 3 seconds. That's what you get in this league, 3 seconds. You don't get 4 seconds, 5, 6, 7 seconds. Geno Smith got plenty of time. Like Eli Manning would love to have DeBrickashaw Ferguson. You know, he would. And every quarterback in the league would love to have Nick Mangold. So I don't understand why everyone thinks they're going to take an offensive line early. I think the starting five is set, barring injury. It's going to be Carpenter at left guard, Cologne at right, Greeno at right tackle, and then they have tons of, like, mid-round guys from the last regime. They've got Ode Ibushi, Winters, even Dolph Freeman looked fine, you know, when he played the one quarter of snaps that he played last year. He looked fine. And, you know, Dakota Dozier might be a player. That's 9 guys, and Brewer. And they signed Corey Hilliard. That's 11 guys. I mean, like, where is this draft pick going to play? So that's my opinion on the O-line, is that they're underrated, they're good enough to win, and they're probably not going to take that player They might not draft one at all. They might not draft a single O-lineman in seven rounds. That's how little I value the pick. But again, I'm biased, okay? I'm a Jets fan, and I'm biased. So that's just me.
Well, as a Jets fan, obviously, you know, everybody is talking about Marcus Mariota. That's the big ticket pick that, you know, everybody has associated the Jets with so far during the course of projecting the drafts. Everybody wants to know where Marcus Mariota is going to land. And then a lot of people think that the draft is going to fall into place after that, in the early first round. So what's your opinion, first off, on Marcus Mariota? And if he is there at six, do you see the Jets pulling the trigger on him?
Great question. I mean, the Marcus Mariota question, we could do a half an hour on that just alone. But the long and the short of it is that the Jets don't get lucky enough that Marcus Mariota drops to six. That's how I feel about it, is that if he's there, it's a no-brainer. But there would also be a bunch of teams willing to trade up, and they can be looking at multiple first-rounders. How do you say no to that? The thing is, the Jets need a quarterback, you know, and if he's there, you have to take him. But, like, I don't even think it's going to be an issue, because Marcus Mariota beat Jameis Winston heads up in the playoffs. And all the scouts and all the people who, like, study the films, they don't get to make the pick. The guys who make the pick are the owners. And that might have been the only college football game that some of these owners have saw all year long, is the Rose Bowl in the playoffs. So, like, why would you take the guy? Well, obviously, Winston's going before Mariota, but I could see the case either way. If the Bucs wanted Mariota at one and it came out 24 hours ago, that was their pick, not surprising. Because it's basically a coin flip. I don't see that much of a difference. The off-season stuff on Winston and weighs him down, and Mariota obviously is very far away from being a ready-to-go prospect. He's got to learn a totally different way of playing offense. But, you know, either way, it's a quarterback's league, and you need one to win. So if the Jets somehow traded down instead of taking Marcus Mariota, I think, like, how do you sell that? How do you sell season tickets based on that? Oh, yeah, we need to get more picks. Like, how does that put asses in the seats? It doesn't. You know, it's New York. It's not like, it's not St. Louis. You can't just trade forever and nobody cares. Like, these people will get fired. So I think they would have to do it if he was there. But I don't think it'll be it's a luxury problem to have. And they've done a ton of due diligence on him, because it is an possibility he could get there. It's like a non-zero possibility. But I try not to think about it, because it's not even worth my brain power. If it gets there, they'll know what to do about it, hopefully. You know, I mean, it would seem like a no-brainer.
Okay, so, you know, getting off of this year's draft a little bit and actually rewinding to last year's draft, a lot of people are forgetting about guys like McDougal, Evans, Dakota Dozier, IK, and guys like Riley. So I wanted to get your opinion really quick on what you think they can contribute this year, and how did you feel about those guys that I just mentioned, you know, going into this year, and how did you feel about us drafting them last year? Because you really haven't heard too much about these guys. And you look at McDougal, who could possibly be, you know, the fourth or fifth corner, Evans as the fourth receiver, and then maybe even a guy like Dozier can push a guy like Clone or Bushi for the right guard spot. So how do you feel about these guys?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was high on the Jets draft last year when it happened. I mean, that's the thing about the draft, is you can look at it one way and it could seem awesome, and then a year later it seems like a complete disaster. I think McDougal getting hurt was a gamble, and they lost out on the gamble. You know, like, I don't know. The funny thing is that McDougal might actually be in better shape than Milner. I don't know if we're going to see either of those two guys. You know, I think McDougal is probably closer to coming back than Milner is, based on where, you know, where the injuries are and everything. And Achilles is a disaster for a corner most of the time. So, I mean, long story short, I like them coming out. I liked Pryor and Amaro. I thought those were solid picks, but they're not like core picks. You know, like, they took a safety and a tight end and a corner. They didn't take any, you know, it's what you would call high priority picks. And the real problem with that draft, which I noticed you didn't mention a single wide receiver, they took three wide receivers and they're all pretty much worthless. That's the problem with that draft, is that if they'd gotten a decent wide receiver out of it, if they'd gotten, you know, Martavis Bryant in the third, we'd say, what a great draft. And maybe Idzik's not even fired. That's how bad the wide receiver situation got. And they were playing with street free agents, and Greg Salas was running wild. I mean, that's a problem. You can't run an NFL team bringing in street free agents at wide receiver. It's just not going to work. So I think, you know, I like Dozier. I think he's got potential. I think IK is an interesting player. I think Riley's basically a special teamer. If you look at the team right now, they're the least deep at outside linebacker. The outside linebacker depth chart is a disaster. And I like Riley and I like IK, but that's why, you know, the other host wants an outside linebacker at six, because they don't really have any, and Pace is getting ridiculously old, and Babin's like a mercenary, so they don't have anybody. Although it is interesting that Quentin Coples got re-upped. So when I saw that they extended Coples, and they took a set, they're not going to pay $7 million to bench Coples, which makes me kind of think that they think the value is going to be at a different position besides outside linebacker at six. That's my little tea leaves moves on that. But I think overall, they had 12 picks, and we're hoping that four or five of them are decent. That's bad. They really screwed it up.
Do you think that this year's draft is, you know, that the outside linebackers is almost like the wide receivers of last year's draft in the first round, where you could see, you know, four or five really talented outside linebackers come from this year's draft class, like last year when we saw the wide receivers come, you know, really, you know, step forward and be the talk of last year's draft?
The draft is deep at linebacker. It's also deep at running back. There's a ton of running backs once you get past the first two. So I think, you know, it would be the equivalent. Yeah, I definitely think they could look at outside linebackers on the come around, guys like Nate Orchard or Eli Harold or any number of guys. There's all sorts of guys that are not even getting pressed, like Frank Clark and you know, Edwards from Florida State, and there's a guy Modlin from Louisville. Like there's a ton of guys at a linebacker. And I think the advantage of taking one in a later round than one is that you can give them a chance to develop and hopefully not have instant, like, 10 sack a year expectations on the guy.
Okay, so in my perfect scenario, the Jets would grab an outside linebacker. This is not in any particular order, but an outside linebacker, a wide receiver, a running back, and an offensive lineman in the first four rounds. And obviously, other than that, I believe that the biggest need is quarterback. But say they don't look to draft a quarterback, I think the next two needs might be a depth free safety and an inside linebacker. I know we just got Henderson and Lattimore and all these guys, but I think they're going to look at a young inside linebacker who can potentially replace David Harrison 2 or 3 years. So obviously, the Jets don't have a fifth and a sixth round pick. So in the seventh round, you know, who are some guys at free safety and inside linebacker that can potentially, you know, either slip a little bit because of some injuries or maybe some legal problems? We're seeing a whole bunch of those now. You know, who could have potential in the seventh round and maybe contribute to the team?
Yeah, I mean, just to take a step back to talk about the inside linebackers, I've wondered if they are signing all these guys, and maybe are they looking to move Davis outside or maybe take Harris and move him outside more? I mean, I'm thinking that they must have some reason for loading up on inside linebacker, and I agree that it's still a need. I totally agree with that. I think they can look for one of those guys. As for the seventh round, it's basically extended undrafted free agency at this point. When you're in the seventh round, you're almost better off taking a guy no one's heard of, because anyone you've heard of has been picked over so many times that if you've heard of them, they'll probably have like a medical red flag or some disaster, you know? So I can't predict the seventh rounder. As long as it's not Dave Yovanovitz or some crazy guy that we've never heard of, like completely off the map, as long as he's in the top 300 prospects or 500 prospects, I think that's fine. I mean, you're really not, I can't remember the last time those picks even paid off. I mean, if you're looking at the draft, I know it's a complete duck of the question, but if you're looking at the draft, you know, you've got maybe a 40 or 50% chance in round one, and then you got maybe a 30, 20 in round two and three. And then as you keep going down, you're actually down to like 8%, 6%. And you're actually more likely to find an undrafted free agent that makes a team over a seventh rounder.
We're talking with Matt Pettoni from Draft Daddy. Now, Matt, last question we have for you. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you see any type of player that really might come out of nowhere that the Jets might take at six, like maybe a defensive tackle or, you know, a position that they really don't need, but their options and their best pick available is on their board might not be there? What player would you see, you know, as an option as this, you know, the Jets go out there and pick that we all might say, wow, I did not see this coming at all?
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be Leonard Williams. If they stuck at six and Leonard Williams is there and they took Leonard Williams, well, then they might be trading Wilkerson by the end of the first round. I mean, that's what that means. You know, like, I don't know that. I know they've worked him out, and I know that they don't really have any particular ties to Wilkerson or Sheldon. But if the best player is truly there and it's Leonard Williams, then I think they almost have to take. I mean, you have to go value. Even though I think out of the four that I listed and the two quarterbacks, one of those is going to be there. But it assumes that Leonard Williams is off the board. And I can see a scenario where everybody goes and all that's left is Leonard Williams and Victor Beasley, and they don't want Victor Beasley because he's too small, then yeah, that would be the one shock. And it wouldn't be a terrible pick. I mean, the guy's the number one prospect on a lot of people's boards. So I think that would be the super shock out of it all. I don't see a running back pick. That would be like, I don't even know. I'd go leave my house and run down my driveway if that happened. That would be crazy. That would be absolutely bananas. But yeah, I think it would have to be the defensive tackle. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, overall in this draft, I honestly am the type of person that I cannot wait to put on the TV and see what actually is going to happen, because if I see one more draft board or one more projection of what's going to happen, I think my head might explode. I feel like we have talked about every year. I feel like we've talked about the upcoming draft more than we did the following year. It's like every year there's more and more draft talk. But I mean, it's truly fascinating to see, you know, to be able to, you know, try and predict and see what's going to happen to this franchise. I mean, obviously, the big question is, and I don't think any Jet fan will be disappointed with a pick at six, unless, you know, obviously, me personally, I don't want to see them draft Bud Dupree. I don't want to see them go with an outside linebacker out of Kentucky. I think that's not a good six overall pick. I look at the overall draft and I say to myself, when are the New York Jets going to spend a first round pick on an offensive player? You've went out and you have spent millions and millions of dollars in your defense this offseason. You've added the cornerbacks. You've added the pieces to make your defense better. You drafted the safety in the first round last year. You've built your you pretty much have a first round pick at every single position on your defense. It's time to put more into that offense. I look at a Kevin White. I look at an Amari Cooper. I look at a Marcus Mariota. They need to add an offensive playmaker in the first round. I understand that they put money into the wide receiver, getting Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, but just think how much better this team would be if you throw in, you know, even a Marcus Mariota. Unless you think that Geno Smith is the guy and that you're comfortable with going in with Geno Smith as your starting quarterback this year, and you think he's going to be here for the next two or three years and even more in the future, then you don't take the quarterback. Then you pass on the quarterback. Again, I understand where people are coming from in the outside linebackers. If Marcus Mariota's gone, if Kevin White's gone, who knows? Even if maybe every offensive player they like on the board is gone by the time they get to six, I wouldn't mind seeing them trade down or take an outside linebacker. But at some point in time, in my opinion, you have to add offensive value in the first round. You have to do it.
I agree, buddy. I think you're looking at White or Cooper. I think that's going to be if I had to bet the rent payment, I think it's one or the other. And I could see Cooper going lower just because teams fall in love with upside, you know. And if the Jets could somehow get Amari Cooper at six, I'd be a happy camper.
Right, and I think that Amari Cooper is NFL ready too. I don't think White is NFL ready. I think players coming out of Alabama and those type of schools that are playing, it's almost like playing in the minor leagues for the National Football League in the SEC like that. So I look at a player like Amari Cooper and how he performed in big games and on the big stage and on an NFL type offense. I honestly, you know, that's a guy that could be playing wide receiver for the New York Jets for 10 years. You know, that could be a pick like when they drafted Keyshawn Johnson back in the day. I mean, this could be a wide receiver that the Jet fan could remember. And so at some point, like I said before, you have to add to the offense via the first round, whether that be a wide receiver or some way, shape, or form. Obviously, the sexy pick that everybody wants to see is Marcus Mariota. You know, if the quarterback is on the board, You know, it's not going to be in New York this year, but if it was, you know that Radio City would be going absolutely bonkers if, you know, if Marcus Mariota's on the board and the New York Jets are picking. So I think.
Yeah, I mean, let me just add one thing before I go. I hate to keep cutting you off, but just to cover all my bases, you asked me about a surprise pick. Like, imagine if they took Devontae Parker at 6, you know? I mean, I think there's value at Parker over some of these third and fourth outside linebackers, and I don't think that's going to be the pick. Don't quote me on that. But what I do think is that he's not going to fall that far. He's going to fall to maybe 10 or 11. So, I mean, if they wanted to, they could take a wide receiver, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. I mean, that's in my opinion, is the direction they're going to go in. And like I said, you know, we don't know what it looks like in their draft room, and it all is going to come down to what they think of Geno Smith and also what type of trade offers could they get. You know, what type of offer, if Marcus Mariota is on the board and a team, and you're comfortable with Geno Smith and the Jets are finally in a position where they feel like they can, you know, take advantage of another team's desperation and a team's going to sell the farm for Marcus Mariota, like, you know, who knows? You might even be able to work out a deal with the San Diego Chargers and swing, you know, a trade with them to bring Phillip Rivers into town. You don't know what's going to happen on draft day. These teams are interested. A lot of people are more interested in Marcus Mariota than we actually think. A ton of teams have expressed interest in trading. And, you know, I think this year's draft, we could see a big-time trade, and it could involve the New York Jets for once.
I mean, the new guy, McKenna, he did say he wanted to trade down, and we talked about it. They don't have a fifth and a sixth. So, I mean, if they can find a buyer for that sixth spot and they can get multiple picks out of it, they are definitely going to move. The the value at this draft is actually the 10 to, like, 50 spot slots. I mean, we're arguing about the top 10s, and part of the reason why that's so hard is because there's not as much difference between the lower part of the top 10 and the top part of the next crop. And I think if you have multiple picks in that teens area or, you know, the early 20s, you could actually get a player of just as good value, which is why it's preferable in some people's eyes to move down.
Well, Matt, you know, the draft is definitely an interesting time of the year. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens come Thursday night.
All right, boys. Good talking to you, man.
Thank you so much for coming on, Matt.
Yep.
And that was Matt Patoni from Draft Daddy. So we're going to take a quick break here on Jet Nation Radio. When we come back, we're going to dive into more draft talk as we are counting it down to the NFL draft. We'll also talk about the interesting report today that the New York Jets are reportedly were getting some offers on Muhammad Wilkerson. We'll talk about the even thought process behind thinking about trading Mo Wilkerson and how this could affect the Jets come draft day. Back after this. You're listening to Jet Nation Radio. Pack it up, pack it in, let me begin. Pack in the wind, battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever slack up, honk it better back up. Try and play the role and you're the whole crew will act up. Get up, stand up. Are you a business trying to get the word out about your goods? Or an organization seeking to make the world a better place? Or a band promoting a new tour or debut EP? How do you keep up with the ever-evolving world of social media? Craft your message and make sure it gets to the right people. The answer is the Strategic Peacock. The Strategic Peacock takes pride in helping organizations create and implement online strategies that appropriately target the right audience with the right information, using the right media. From mobile to multimedia, the Strategic Peacock will enhance your online presence. Visit strategicpeacock.com to develop the right web strategies for success.
Hi, I'm Allie, and I'm here to talk about a serious problem. Your children are listening to bad music. They go home, turn on the radio, and get down with their bad selves. You think it's harmless. You think it's just them being a teenager. You're wrong. Nothing is as harmful or addictive as bad music. Soon your kids will start thinking bad music is good, and the world will be filled with only bad music. So talk to your children about the dangers of bad music and tell them about the cure, Indie Outbreak. Indie Outbreak features a huge selection of great indie artists fighting against the bad music plague. good music to save their minds. Join with us at indieoutbreak.com, and together we can help stop the spread of bad music.
New music.
Are you an independent artist? Do you struggle with getting your music out there without burning a hole in your pocket? The Indie Outbreak is the perfect radio show for you. Broadcasted around the world, heard by thousands of incredible fans, always on demand. You can be too. Interested in being part of the outbreak? Go to IndieOutbreak.com and click the Submit tab for details. Be part of the epidemic sweeping over the world. Indie Outbreak. IndieOutbreak.com.
Amazing.
Anybody can be beat.
You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, and here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowd.
And the home of the Jets.
And we are back off the break here on Jet Nation Radio. So, Joe, what were your thoughts on some of the stuff that Matt discussed in regards to the draft?
There's a few things that I don't necessarily agree with. When I asked about the offensive line, and he said it's pretty much set. You know, you have guys like Hilliard, you have guys like Brewer. But there's a lot of questions with the starters. You have DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who is steadily declining. He's about to be owed $14 million next year. So you'd think if he wasn't willing to restructure that, a guy like DeBrickashaw Ferguson is nowhere close to worth $14 million at this point in his career right now. So I think he might be gone. You're looking at left guard with Carpenter, which, yeah, I think he's slotted to start right now, but he's had some injury problems. Even though I'm not too worried about the left guard spot, I'm not worried about center. Obviously, you have Nick Mangold there. But, you know, when he said right guard, it's probably going to be Willie Colon starting. I just cringe. It's just, if you have Willie Colon starting and you're not worried about the offensive line, then, you know, I definitely have a different belief in that. I don't think it is Willie Colon right now. I think today I heard that Abushi and Colon were rotating at right guard. So I would like to make a move there. Maybe you draft a guy like Clemmings or a guy like Jake Fisher in the second round. You either kick him to right guard to start there, and then you're looking at a decent offensive line at least, or maybe you start him at right tackle and you make a guy like Giacomini kick inside because you saw how many problems he has with speed rushers. So I'm not as confident in the offensive line. I know that I believe I said this stat a couple months ago, Brandon, but Geno Smith actually had top 10 highest time in the pocket out of all the other lines or out of all the other quarterbacks in the whole entire NFL last year. He just held on to the ball too long. But I'm not as comfortable with the O-line as he is. And I disagree with the comment about the draft being, spread out through the first round. You could find guys in the, 15 to 20 range that you could in the 5 through 10 range. I actually think this draft is very, very top heavy. And I think if the Jets were to, trade out of that spot, I would want it to be, to a 15 to Houston, or maybe to the Rams are at 13. So I would like to trade back into the top 15. I wouldn't like to trade out of, into the 21 to 25 range, because I think the talent there really starts to fall off like really, really badly. A lot of professional guys have, around 20 first round grades for this draft. So I don't necessarily agree with that. And, he definitely knows what he's talking about, but we have some different views. And the thing with the seventh round pick is I don't see the seventh round as just as good or equal to as unrestricted free agency, because you do see guys, obviously it's very rare. You see a guy like Trevor Riley, who's probably going to make a special teams impact. You see a guy like Antonio Allen from a couple of years ago who made a good impact on his team. He was almost a starter last year, and he's definitely a solid depth player for us. So I don't necessarily agree with that either. So, there's a few things I disagree with, but I agree with most of what he was saying with about like Beasley and Dupree and things like that. But how did you feel about him, Brandon?
I think that he was – I agreed with most of what he said. I don't have any interest in the Jets taking offensive linemen with the first pick. I think that that's not a good direction they need to go, and they need to add playmakers to this roster. Now, offensive playmakers is the way to go. I mean, I want to see the New York Jets on draft day either take Kevin White, Amari Cooper, or Marcus Mariota. They need to draft a guy who's going to put points on the board and who's going to make a splash on offense. It's that simple. I mean, you went out this offseason and you reassured your, you know, you shored up your defense with the additions in the secondary by bringing back Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, getting Gilchrist and Buster Screen. You know, your defense is practically set. I mean, when you look at this defense, obviously outside linebacker is a concern, but how much of a concern is outside linebacker when you could potentially have the best defensive line and secondary in the National Football League and shut people down on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, it's a concern, but it's not a concern. Right now, anything the Jets add to this defense is going to be a luxury. The backbone of their defense is set up front and in the back end, you know, and even in the middle of part of their defense with David Harris and DeMario Davis. So, I mean, I look at this defense and I see them being set from top to bottom, and outside linebacker just puts them over the top. I then look at this offense and I say, okay, who is your playmaker? Brandon Marshall? Okay. I could definitely, you know, he's a playmaking wide receiver, puts up big numbers, will definitely, you know, boost the wide receiver core for the Jets. I also look at a guy like Eric Decker. Yes, had a productive year last year. Maybe if the Jets were a better team, he would have done more. I think that he's obviously a playmaker. After those two guys, it's very hard for me to look at a game-changing playmaker. And I don't even think Eric Decker is really a game-changer. I think Brandon Marshall at times can be, but I don't think Eric Decker is a game-changing wide receiver. You know, he has the potential to be. I just don't think he's there yet. So I look at it and say, who could be the game-changing wide receiver the Jets have? And I look at a Kevin White, I look at Amari Cooper, and I look at last year's draft. You look at Mike Evans, you look at Sammy Watkins, you look at Odell Beckham Jr. Those are three wide receivers that were taken in the first round that were immediate game changers for the teams that they went and played on. That's what the New York Jets need. And you look at the quarterback play on those teams, okay, look at the numbers that Mike Evans put up with the quarterback situation in Tampa. Eli Manning was definitely not himself last year either. Look at their record. Look at the numbers Odell Beckham put up with the Giants. And also, look at the quarterback situation in Buffalo. Very similar to the New York Jets. Look at the numbers that Sammy Watkins put up. The Jets, these wide receivers are so good coming out of college that sometimes the quarterback situation doesn't even matter, as you can see from what happened last year. They need to go out and add a wide receiver. It's time to add a playmaker to this offense. And guess what? If you want to take Marcus Mariota when he's there at the sixth pick, I'm all for it. I am all for it because I think that, you know, you have to eventually get the guy that you think is going to be the backbone of this organization. If you don't think Geno Smith is the backbone of this organization, take Marcus Mariota. If you don't think Marcus Mariota is the backbone of this organization, but somebody else covets him and think that he's going to be the next best quarterback since Joe Montana, go ahead. Trade down in the draft because the New York Jets can set themselves up for success in three ways, in my opinion, in this draft. Taking quarterback, taking a wide receiver, or trading down. I don't think that I don't think taking a defensive player is the way to go. Now, if the wide receivers are gone and Marcus Mariota is gone, and you don't think that and trading down, you're just not getting the value, and you look to your draft board and say, okay, let's add a best available player, I'm all for it. Add an outside linebacker. Add a big-time pass rusher. Not a problem. It's going to make your team better. There's no way the New York Jets do not become a better football team after Thursday night, after this draft. It's impossible. All they're going to do is continue to get better. So that's the positive. But you have to be able to see what you really, really need because you only get to draft once a year. And I know people say you don't draft for need, you draft for talent. The Jets need to draft someone that's going to walk onto their football field and change the team. That's what the sixth pick does. Because if they're picking in the top 10 next year again, that means they didn't do well picking in this year's draft. And that's
I definitely don't see them picking in the top 10. You definitely got to a lot of points there. So, you know, with the Marcus Mariota thing, you know how I feel about it. I definitely understand if they do take him, obviously. If they don't take him, he turns into something. We look like a bunch of buffoons. So I could see us taking him. I wouldn't be too mad as long as he does sit. And you obviously think about, you know, I'm not saying the Jets are going to be great next year, but you're looking at a, what, 6-10, 7-9 record at worst. I personally believe that. I don't know if that's my fandom coming in. But if they're picking around, you know, 18-20, and then you see a guy who you want to take in the draft as a quarterback, you have to trade up a lot more to get him. So I understand taking a quarterback now while you're at 6 and while it's easy. Even if you have to trade, you know, maybe a fourth-round pick or a third or fourth-round pick to move up to one spot to Washington and take him. I couldn't be terribly mad. Brandon, you just know it's not my preference. The whole thing about the offenses, I understand it. If I had to pick four guys, I think I would want the Jets to end up with. I understand the Mariota thing; he wouldn't necessarily be in it, but it would be Fowler is definitely my number one. My two would probably be Cooper. Definitely Cooper is my number two. Three would be Beasley, and four would be White. So I'm on the same page with you. And after listening to McCagden's press conference this weekend, you know, he basically said that he actually did say that 3-4 outside linebacker is the life of the 3-4 defense. So when I see that, and then when you see the guys in the second round who aren't as impressive, you look at a guy like Eli Harrell, who could be a late first round pick, who might not even be there. You know, there's not a ton of talent in the second and third round. When you look at receiver and you look in the third and fourth round, you see guys like Tyler Lockett and Hardy and Rashad Green. You know, there's definitely some guys there. And then something else he said in his press conference this weekend, he really seemed like he's not too high on taking a receiver. And in the first round, it really seemed like he loves the depth of the receiver in rounds 2-4. So I found that very interesting. And a lot of people were talking about trading up, and I just don't see the value in it. And something that he, you know, watching the press conference, he's very honest. He might be boring, and he's not a Rex Ryan. He's not as boring as Isaac, but when you ask him a question, he's very, very honest about it, and he actually gives you his real opinion. And he really seemed like he wants to trade back and he wants to accumulate picks. And I, at this point, obviously, it depends what pick it's to, who's on the board. If a guy like Fowler or Cooper is there, it's going to hurt a little bit to trade back because, like you said, if you add Cooper to this offense and you have a top five running game, which our running game has been at least in the top 10 in the last 5 years, you add that to Jason Morrow in his second year coming into a spread offense, which he ran at Texas Tech. You add that with Decker, with Marshall, and then Cooper and Curley. There's no reason for Geno Smith not to succeed. So we're going to have a whole bunch of weapons. But, you know, it's definitely going to be very, very interesting, Brandon. And, you know, I want to hit on a couple other things. The really important news is that girl Jenny from 2 weeks ago, I don't know if you've seen the Twitter, but she sent me a Simba – a picture of Simba in a Revis jersey. So I just wanted to let you know that real quick. You know, Fitzpatrick changed his number to 14. His beard is shaved. And then Woody, I just wanted your real quick opinion on the Jets being fined or Woody being fined, you know, which is equal to 17 cents. So he's fined $100,000 today for his tampering charges. So I want to get your quick opinion on that. And I know you want to get into go ahead.
I think that that's ridiculous. I think that it is what it is. Who cares? As long as the Jets didn't lose any draft picks, that's like Woody Johnson. That's like us going to the dollar menu at McDonald's and ordering a couple of McChickens.
Oh,
that's
not even.
That
it's,
right
it's like me giving you a dime. It's really nothing. It's absolutely
exactly.
Nothing.
Exactly. So I'm not really concerned about that. But like one thing I wanted to bring up, and in regards to like a guy like Amari Cooper. So and then I want to move on to the Mo Wilkerson talk here.
Go ahead.
You know, you look at a guy, okay, who, like Mike Evans, right, who was the seventh round pick by Tampa Bay in last year's draft, okay? What do you think, coming out of college, who do you think was more coveted, you know, Mike Evans or Amari Cooper?
Oh, Amari Cooper to me by far. I wasn't a huge fan of Mike Evans, to be completely honest,
right.
But I was a little bit wrong.
And Mike Evans' numbers last year on a team that had – probably the worst quarterback situation in the draft. I mean, worst quarterback situation in the NFL. And now is picking number one and is guaranteed to pick a quarterback. Last year over 1,000 yards in 15 games, not even a full season, 15 games, with 12 touchdowns. That's what a guy like Amari Cooper can bring to the New York Jets.
No doubt about it.
That's a wide receiver that it doesn't matter if who's you know, those numbers don't lie. You look at Mike Evans, over 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns last year. That's a type of player and a wide receiver like Amari Cooper that's going to come into the NFL and is not going to care who's throwing him the ball. He's going to put up numbers and be a playmaker no matter where he goes. That's why I look at this and I say to myself, well, who do you think can make the Jets immediately better on the offensive side of the ball. It's Amari Cooper. And I get it.
Oh, yeah.
I get it, you know, with these third and fourth round wide receivers and, oh, there's depth and yada, yada, yada. I heard the same thing last year. I heard the same thing last year that, oh, we don't need to take a wide receiver in the first round because it's like they're growing on trees in the NFL draft in 2014. You could get a top, number two, number three wide receiver in the third to sixth round. And guess what the Jets came away with last year? Ugots. That's what they came away with last year from the draft. Nothing. You passed on all those wide receivers that were in the draft last year. You didn't make a move to trade up for anybody. You didn't add one of those guys in the draft last year. Don't make the same mistake twice. You're not going to have to trade up most likely to get a playmaking wide receiver. Don't shoot yourself in the foot in letting one of these guys go because you want to take an outside linebacker and a pass rusher. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Don't put all your chips into your defense like they did when Rex Ryan was here. That was part of the problem. Your playmakers and your team was built around all of your defensive players. And not to say that this team won't be a defense-first team, because clearly it's going to be, but it's time for them to add chips on the offensive side of the ball. Don't take a wide receiver in the third round and hope that he's going to be a gem because you think there's depth there. Take an outside linebacker or a defensive player in the second or third round and hope that he turns into a gem. Take the sure thing for offense. Take the maybe for defense in the later round. That's my opinion on the Jets draft.
No, I definitely disagree with that, because when you're looking at a talent fall off from outside linebacker from the first to the third compared to the fall off of wide receiver talent from the first to the third, I just don't think it's even comparable. And from what McKagan said too, it really seems like he's going to take the best player available. So if he has, you know, let's say he has Vic Beasley as an A-, and then he has Kevin White as a B+, he's going to take the A- guy. I don't necessarily agree with you have to take a receiver, because if he has one of these outside linebackers,
why are you going to put millions and millions of dollars, spend hundreds of millions of dollars this offseason in rebuilding your defense and then take a defensive player with your first pick? For what reason? How is that benefiting your team?
Because if you're looking at, let's just say Vic Beasley, who I'm not saying he's one of these guys, but I just want you to actually watch this. This is a little bit off topic, Brandon, but I watched a sports class on Vic Beasley, and he has a faster spin move than LeSean McCoy, and he accelerates faster than Cordell Patterson. That's just a little footnote. I thought that was pretty cool. But if you look at Vic Beasley, and he turns out to be a stud outside linebacker, and you look at Kevin White, who turned out to be a good receiver, and you're looking at it in 10 years from now, and Vic Beasley is a better player. I know that we have a little bit of a need for a wide receiver, and it's not really that great, because you look at Marshall, look at Decker, look at Curley. There's really not a need, and I think what the Jets did by adding guys like Marshall and adding all these guys that had inside linebacker in that corner, I think it's just really best player available, and I don't have a problem with taking receiver. I'm not saying I have a problem taking receiver.
Let me tell you right there what you just said. That is the story and the way of the NFL draft. You know, when we're sitting here 5 to 10 years from now, looking at these players, are they going to be a stud or are they going to be a dud? And that's all that it comes down to. And when I looked at it last year, and you look at, I'll keep bringing his name up again. I look at Amari Cooper, and I look at a guy like Mike Evans, and and you look at the numbers. You just look at the pure numbers from Mike Evans, the way he produced on the worst football team in the National Football League last year, and putting up over 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns, and take a step back and say, well, who do you think is a better wide receiver? Mike Evans, Amari Cooper. Now, I keep bringing up Amari Cooper because that's my favorite. That's my favorite player in the NFL in the draft for the Jets, and that's who I want to see the Jets take. But if Amari Cooper's not there, I'm not going to look at a guy. I look at a Kevin White, and I say, is this Darius Hayward Bay 2.0? A guy that we're looking at that's based off of speed that really is a hit or miss prospect. I don't think the Jets should take a hit or miss prospect with the sixth overall pick. I want to see them go for offense. But I also want to see a guy that, you know, you really, I want to see them pick a player, and this is just my opinion, that is really going to come onto the scene and produce in some way, shape, or form. That they're not going to, you know, you look at Vernon Golston, hit or miss type of player. You look at Mark Sanchez, hit or miss type of player. These are hit or miss guys that they're either going to be great or they're going to be a bust. And I think that the Jets need to do whatever they can to bring a guy in at six that's going to somehow, some way produce, whether that be an outside linebacker, whether that be a wide receiver, whether that be a quarterback. You cannot waste an opportunity like this, because guess what? If you pick poorly when you got the sixth pick in the draft, odds are you're going to be picking in the top 10 and you're going to be getting another chance to do it again. Because if you keep having bad drafts, you're not going to have a good foundation for your football team and you're not going to be successful. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, well, no, you look at the draft last year, and what Mike Evans was taking, I believe, at 8 by the Buccaneers. So
seven.
You obviously would have had to trade a lot up to get him. So I understand I understand Calvin Pryor getting picked last year, because other than Calvin Pryor at that position, obviously Beckham was gone, Watkins was gone, all these guys were gone. So we really had a chance at taking a guy like Brandon Cooks, who he's good, and I'm not sure he's going to be as good of a player, or I'm not sure who's a better player out of him and Pryor. So I understand last year. But with Cooper, no, I definitely understand. You look at the guy, you look at his routes. He runs every single route in the route tree. So, you know, he runs everything. He catches every ball. He when he catches it, it's not like he just goes down or it goes down easy. He takes it, you know, 15 to 20 yards. So it's definitely why Cooper's my number two guy. You know, my guy is Fowler, but if Fowler's gone, if Cooper's gone, I understand with the no miss prospect. So that I definitely agree with you. You look at a Beasley. He was near the late teens to early 20s before the combine. He spikes up in after the combine, so he's a hit or miss. He could be too small. He's 249.
Yep.
So if he can, I'm not saying he's going to be a bust. There's no need to take that as I'm saying he's going to be a bust. But all these people, everybody thinks, you know, top 15 guys, everybody's going to be amazing. But it never turns out that way. You look at the redress, you look who actually comes out. A guy like Beasley could easily be a bust. I don't think he will be, but he could be. You look at a guy like White, he could be a bust too. He had 1 year of production. I know he goes up and gets the ball, but so do a lot of guys. So, you know, they can be busted, and that's why if a guy like Cooper or a guy like Fowler is not there, I could definitely, you know, see them trading back, which I really think they're going to look into if their top guys aren't there. So, you know, it's Brandon, I am so, so ready for this trip. You know, we're 47 hours away, 47 hours away and 3 minutes from the draft. I'm so ready to see who we pick. But get to the Wilkerson thing real quick. I know you wanted to talk about the Wilkerson thing. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I look at the Muhammad Wilkerson. I look at the I look at the Muhammad Wilkerson situation. And obviously this is just rumors, and it's Adam Schefter starting things up. And now here we go. No contract comes.
Yep.
Right, you know, no contract has come throughout this offseason for Wilkerson to this point, and now here come the trade talks. So, I mean, this is very, very interesting for this to come now, where the NFL draft is in 2 days. A lot of people are talking about the New York Jets potentially trading down from this sixth pick because they don't feel like, you know, Marcus Mariota's their guy, and they, you know, if Mariota's on the board, that they really, really could field some fantastic offers. I just want to picture. I want you to picture something right now. I mean, this is pure. You know, pick up your Xbox controller and let's play some franchise Madden football right here. Okay, I'll pick up your PlayStation, whatever you want, your Sega controller, whatever you feel like, your Nintendo 64, whatever you want. So you look at Muhammad Wilkerson's situation. You look at the Jets. You look at their defensive talent. You say to yourself, this team obviously is a quarterback away from you know, getting to the next level. You know, without a quarterback, without a good quarterback, an average quarterback with this team, the Jets are still going to struggle to get to where they want to be. If you're sitting at six and Marcus Mariota is on the board and you have a San Diego or a, you know, even a New Orleans and a team that is looking to make a trade, a team that wants to make a splash, and you have Muhammad Wilkerson in your back pocket with the sixth pick, what do you think about a player swap?
Uh-oh.
Like a Philip Rivers and a number one pick to the Jets, or even more than that, Phillip Rivers a 1 and a 2 or 1 and a 3, whatever they put together, to the New York Jets for their number one and like a Muhammad Wilkerson. Do you think that the Jets could potentially use Wilkerson to complete a mega, mega draft day trade? If the New Orleans Saints come calling and they say, look, we want the 6th pick, we'll offer you our number one, Drew Brees, and a number 5 for your number one and Muhammad Wilkerson. Do you do that trade?
My answer is absolutely no.
You're out of your freaking mind. You're out of your freaking mind.
No. When you look at Drew Brees, he has 2 or 3 years left of really good football. You look at Wilkerson, who is, in my opinion, in most people's opinion, he's the second best 3-4 defensive end in the Brandon. He's the second best 3-4 defensive end in the entire league.
Wouldn't you want to potentially win a Super Bowl in the next 2 to 3 years?
I don't want the quick fix. I don't want to get the quarterback really quick to potentially win the Super Bowl.
I just wanted to get you going. I just wanted to kind of get you going. I saved it for the end of the show because I just wanted
God.
I had to get your blood boiling a little bit.
Let me just say real quick. He's the second best 3-4 defensive end in the entire league. He's a cornerstone of your defense. You draft him. He's a New Jersey guy. Obviously, doesn't have ties. But he's one of the best players in the NFL, and you're just going to trade him away because he's not signing a contract as quickly as you want to. I think if a team has
if I can get a quarterback that's going to take this team to the next level and get me to 12-4, 11-5, and a solid playoff team, and potentially win a division, I'm making that move.
Maybe if it's for a guy like Aaron Rodgers, not old guys.
Aaron Rodgers. You would have to put Muhammad Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, and Antonio Cromartie.
Exactly. And that is exactly why I'm saying I'm not doing it. The rumors are completely bogus.
You're out of your mind. You're one of those guys in Madden who puts like the salary cap on, I bet, or something like that when you play. You try and make it for real or something like that.
No, it's just you don't trade one of the best players in the NFL for 1 year when he's a cornerstone of your defense, and obviously quarterback aside, some people have to trade us multiple first round picks, a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth, their coach, their GM. It's not happening. I can literally almost guarantee that Wilkerson will not be traded on draft day.
It's your Christmas. Merry Christmas and enjoy your draft on Thursday. And again, remember, Jet Nation Radio is proudly sponsored by Mile Social. Mile manages your social media so you can focus on running your business. Please visit milesocial.com for more information. And remember, the NFL draft and New York Jets talk never stops. It always continues around the clock on JetNation.com. The forums are exploding every single day with new users and new posts. You want to talk about the NFL draft? You want to mention who you think the New York Jets are going to pick? Head on over to JetNation.com. Again, the forums exploding every single day. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We're going to have some serious draft talk for you next Tuesday. I will be out, so you'll be listening to Joe and Vinny on Tuesday night on Jet Nation Radio, breaking it down without me, and I'm sure Joe will be saying everything he wants because I won't be here to argue with him. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Thank you for tuning in to Jet Nation Radio. And remember, you can hear us live every Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time right here on Jet Nation Radio.